Thanks for tuning in to your Day Off Podcast, hosted by your boys, Corey and Tony.
I think by the end of today, I might have another best friend.
They're committed to making you fall in love with the hair industry, one podcast at a time.
You're going to grab a lot of information.
Yeah,
you're going to learn a lot.
Presented by Hairdistry.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is it.
Your Day Off Podcast will begin after a word from our sponsors.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to your day off. My name is Corey. Of course, I'm sitting with my best friend, Tony. What's up, buddy?
What's up, homie?
I'm definitely trading you in for best friend today, bro. Dude, one of my favorite
I'm
people
not even
ever.
Scared. I'm not even scared because, you know, that would be a one-way friendship.
No, sir. No, sir. You don't know. Hey, so.
Well, that's long-distance relationships are hard.
Oh, I get you. I don't know. The internet age kind of makes things easy, man. I mean, I could use a little kick-in co-host every once in a while.
You always trying to hurt my feelings.
Feelings hurt. Hey, man. So I don't really know how to set today up except to say that, like, we have been so blessed in our podcast kind of run or journey. And I'm getting all chilly now, but we get to do some pretty cool stuff. We get to get invited to some pretty cool stuff. And today on the podcast, we have the one and only, the amazing Britt Siva. And to that, she invited us to host the Thrivers Live event. I guess that was a couple months ago, but we were able to host that. And it was just such a very, very cool experience. And what Britt is doing for the industry is completely different than what anyone else is doing.
See, Britt's full of grace and mercy, right? Because we were supposed to be there live, and then someone got sick. So we had to do it virtually.
Yep.
And then this podcast was supposed to be a month ago, and then someone got sick again.
It kind of did. I mean, it was the first time ever on the podcast was that you had to leave halfway through because your little dude got your grandson got sick. But yeah, she definitely gave us that grace and mercy, didn't she?
Yeah, or
twice,
or it could be a jinx.
No, that ain't a jinx, man. She's not a jinx.
No, I'm teasing.
Come on. As my wife busts in the door and tells Tony he has to leave again.
No,
we're not leaving. But it's really interesting what Britt's up to. And actually, a couple weeks ago when we were at Hair Love Retreat, we were chatting with somebody, and like what Britt has been able to do is to be able to bring a whole bunch of value to the industry and into the industry, but she kind of works outside of the industry. And what I mean by that is, like, when we were at Thrivers Live, like, most of her keynotes were not in the industry, but they brought incredible, incredible value to our industry.
Dude, for so many years, I don't know if I'm not blaming the brands or I'm not calling the brands out or anything, but it seems like they try to keep everybody within the circle and inside this bubble, right?
In their bubble.
And therefore, mm-hmm. we get all of our knowledge, all of our mentorship. We get everything inside this bubble. And she's definitely stepped outside the bubble. And so, you know what? If this is working for all these other big businesses in the world, why can't it work for ours? And so what she's done is bringing all these other people outside of our industry into ours to inspire the people inside the industry and to help the people in the industry. And it was amazing.
It was amazing. And you know what else she did for me on that same note was that I didn't realize that. Like, I didn't realize all the information that we were getting was inside the industry. And then I kind of watched how she set up her Thrivers Live and how there's all, and I'm like, of course there's good knowledge outside of the industry. You know what I mean? Like, it makes sense. But you're right, man. You know, congrats to the industry for being able to keep it in. But there's so much information out there.
When you go to business school, right, they're breaking down business, right? They're not saying, well, hey, you're in this industry. Well, it only works here. You know what I mean? No, there's fundamentals and there's things that there's, you know, a formula that helps everybody. And she's bringing those people in to teach that.
Should we bring her in?
Yeah.
Because we could talk about her for an hour while she's sitting there.
She could talk. Yeah, she could talk about it herself, right? Come on, let's bring it.
Exactly. So, Ms. Britt Seva, man, welcome back once again to Your Day Off.
Oh, thanks for having me, friends. I have so much I want to say. First of all, I'm honored that I get to be Tony's stand-in whenever he's not available. Whenever. I accept the position. Great. Looking forward to it.
he's going to start booking podcasts and not telling me. And I'm like,
hey, sorry.
I heard you in Berlin. Oh, I'm sorry, dude. I didn't think you were available.
It's how it goes. You know, this is what happens over time. It's okay. We're good with it. But I'm really honored to have gotten to know y'all over the past few years. And like, I do feel like we really are friends. And it's been exciting to kind of see this evolution in the industry to exactly what y'all are saying. Like, I joined the industry in 2007. Like, it was almost like pre-internet. Like, before we even knew all of the opportunity that existed for us. And you're exactly right. I had this epiphany myself of like, Why am I limiting myself to just the education that's being presented to me? You know, we partnered with a big hair color brand, an incredible hair color brand, and they had maybe 20 educators at the time. And it was like, here's our menu, pick your class. That's it. And we accepted it face value. And the more I got into the world and started studying business, I thought, man, it's not 20 people I could learn from. It's like 20,000 people. And why would I limit myself to this tiny pool? And why should anybody in the industry limit themselves? But it's what you exactly said. We don't know what we don't know. And it's like, until you expose yourself and you get out there and you have that light bulb moment of like, oh my gosh, there's just this whole other world to explore. We're blind to it.
Yeah. And to your point, you're right. Because what the brands offer, yeah, absorb that. You know what I mean?
Of course.
But don't stop there. That's not, you know, that's not the only word, right? There's so much, like you said, there's 20,000 people that you can absorb from. So, kudos. It was just brilliantly said about, you know, the 20,000 just people that you can, you know, learn from.
Yeah.
I'm just rambling, but I was awestruck in the sense of, you know, how we all were in that bubble, and it took us so long to really look outside that bubble. And I really didn't see it too much until we started noticing you and a few others, like, wow, they're doing something really, really special.
First off, Britt, from Tony and I, thank you so much for involving us in that. And thank you so much for inviting us. I mean, it's like, it is such an honor to be able to do that kind of stuff. And like, you know, we never really had plans about where this would lead or whatever, but man, for us to kind of, and we're not broadcasters, you know? So, I mean, we have a podcast, but we're not professional broadcast. We're hairdressers, you know? So to be asked to kind of come in and like, and to carry the weight a little bit is such an honor for us, man. I can't express to you enough how appreciative we were for that invitation. And like, it just meant a whole lot to us.
Well, the feeling is so mutual. Like for me, I still see it. Like I see such an evolution for our industry of where I think it can go. And it would never be fun for me to like level up alone. And so for the last few years, I've been really strategic. Like I think people can sometimes see me as like a bit of an introvert because I don't go to a lot of the hair shows and I don't connect broad. Like for me, I go narrow and I go deep. Like when I find people like you and a handful of other educators that we talked about before going live, I like to build the connection as deep as I can with those that I feel like are super values aligned, see where this industry could go in a really big way. And I know it's going to take an army to get us there. And the cool thing is, I feel like it's starting to build. Like we rattled off probably half a dozen names of other people who are like, they see it. They see the bigger picture. And I don't know about you all, but I'm seeing the energetic shift. Like I'm seeing stylists and salon owners see their business differently. And what's interesting in bringing in outside educators like you talked about is in doing that, yes, I'm selfishly doing it because I want our stylists and salon owners to learn from them. But you have to know, like on the flip side, people message me and they're like, I'll be honest, I was a little hesitant to speak at your event because hairstylists and salon owners wouldn't be my typical audience. And then they realize that they had a huge misconception about what our industry is all about. And I think for us to level up in the way that we want to earn the money that we know we deserve, to have everything we want, it has to be that mutual. Like, they have to see us differently. We have to show up differently, but we have to garner that respect outward also. And I think that there's this like really cool crew of people, educators, influencers, voices such as yourselves coming up who are like on this mission. And I think in 10 years, this industry is going to look nothing like it does right now. I think we're in an evolution. It's exciting.
Well, so in the next 10 years, what do you see? Project us out.
I think about this a lot. So I think that we are heading a little bit more traditional business, which I think really scares. It's funny. It's everything we ever wanted. And then it scares us as soon as we start to get it, because you can't have your cake and eat it too. If we are going to have things like health benefits and retirement and make 500 grand a year and do all of the things that corporate America does that we say that we want to do, cool, we've got to show up that way. You can't do that and then also allow your clients to pay you in bottles of wine. You can't do that and then you can't expect that and then also work 7 days a week behind the chair. You can't do that and not raise your prices for 6 years. Like, you've got to get strategic with your business. And we're really seeing people do it at scale. I think that we are going to go a bit more of a traditional, more corporate route over the next decade, but not in a scary way. I think in a really modern way. I think that the way that salon leadership looks right now is going to change tremendously. I keep saying, I think that the gig economy is kind of coming for stylists, but not in the like, I rent a booth one day a week way. Instead, like I look to my daughter a lot. She's 10 weeks into cosmetology school right now.
Oh,
so
wow.
I know. So she's like my little super spy. And I get a lot of insights from her as far as like, all right, what did the up and comers want? They almost want to work like how you'd work in a restaurant, where like maybe this week I work Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, but next week I want to work Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday. And then the following week, I'm going to take the whole week off. And we could say that that's lazy. And we could say that they don't have the work ethic. We could say whatever we want to. It doesn't matter. The new generation always dictates the trend. Like, we laugh at boomers now. Gen X is kind of getting up there in age. I'm a millennial, and even I'm becoming a dinosaur, like, before you know it. And you have to realize, like, the new up and coming generation is going to dictate what counts. And they want exceptional education. They want to be taught deep and fast, and they want to be able to work when they want to, and they don't want to work their lives away. There's just a real evolution coming, and salon owners and the other stylists in the industry are going to have to step up.
But the up and comers has something that we didn't have, and that is the internet, right? So they get to learn twice as fast, if not 10 times faster than we get to learn. So they have it all right there, and they can consume it as much as they want.
Can I speak to that for a second?
Yeah.
Because you hit the nail on the head, and it's so important. I am so impressed by you that you said that. I talk to a lot of salon owners who get frustrated with my advice, because I'll say, like, listen, your assisting program's antiquated. It's not going to work anymore. And they're like, well, somebody has to train with me for a year or 18 months, or they're not going to do it the way I want them to do it. Okay, well, then no one's going to work for you. So just so you know, you can keep it the way you want to keep it, and you'll have no team. Or you can realize that exactly what you said, education is at our fingertips. Ignorance is a choice. It's not like it was a decade ago or 20 years ago, and we got to catch up.
Yeah, because when we used to go to the shows, it would always be the same faces at the shows, and that's the education we would get, and that's all we would know. Now it's completely different.
Yeah, it's absolutely different. You know, I actually had a call with Michael Cole this morning, and one of the things that we chatted about was, did I just name drop Michael? I think I just name dropped.
But I loved it. I loved it. It was good.
But you know what we talked about, which is interesting, is that as a young stylist, when we were coming up as a young stylist, you went to a salon with a good reputation because they attracted the clients. Well, what's happened is now is that everything's changed, and in that weight has been shifted. Now, as an individual and as a person that stands behind the chair, now you attract those clients, or certainly you have the ability or the opportunity, I should say, to attract those clients.
And we know a couple of young hairdressers straight out of school already had a clientele and went straight to a studio suite.
Yep.
You couldn't have done that 10 years ago at all.
You couldn't have done that 5 years ago. Would have been impossible.
Yeah.
Different now. Yeah. Different. Now, what's interesting, layering onto what you just said, is I agree, because now stylists know to build their own brand, and they're doing it on TikTok, they're doing it on the gram, they're doing it wherever. It's easy. You can have a brand up and running in a weekend. It's no problem. If that doesn't mean that salons are becoming obsolete, which I think is the concern, is a lot of people are like, well, everyone's just going to work in studio suites and that's going to be in. No, they're not. Of course not. It's not for everybody. However, stylists who do choose to work for salons will expect the salon to be the machine. And I know that's frustrating for salon owners to hear, but if I'm not going to work independently, then you better be feeding me clients, because otherwise, why wouldn't I?
Right. If you're going to build your own success, then you can do it.
I also think that, I mean, the three of us have been around long enough to know that there's a model for everybody.
Of course.
You know, not everybody is a sweet person. You know what I mean?
No.
There's so many people that are going to need the support of a salon. Another thing that was brought up this morning that I find interesting too, that at least if like our friends that go straight into the suite, is that they don't have the role models that are in their 30s, 40s, and 50s that then say, hey, put some money away. You know, because when you're in your 20s, you're so trained, challenged, whatever, where you are, to where you're just spending everything that you have and not putting that money away. And I think sometimes it takes people in their second or third decade of working to say, man, I should have put more money away. So,
well, that's not true if they belong to Thrivers, though.
Hey, well, hold on.
Well, hold on, though. But my transition to that was going to be that in a traditional team based salon, you know, you have your manager or you have your coach in the house. Well, now what's happened is now there's so many, again, different opportunities with Thrivers Live or with any kind of other coaching. That's why there's a lot of coaching in the space, is because there's people that need it.
Right.
I agree. So I think that to what you're saying, like, I still have mentors. I pay for people to have coaching calls with me. Like, I know I don't know everything, but we're all of a different generation. And I look to like the Gen Zs and the younger people, and we can say like, they need us, because we know that they do. Mm-hmm. Like, I used to hate it when people were like, yeah, I've walked in your shoes. I know what, but now I'm like, I'm that person. Like, I'm telling you, like, save for retirement. Don't blow all your money. You don't have it all figured out. You can't spend all your profit, because we've learned those lessons and we know those things. But the question becomes, like, part of it is convincing somebody that it's cooler to be in a salon team than it is in a studio suite. Like, that is part of the job, because I agree with you. Not everybody's cut out for a studio suite, but it's cool and it's trendy. And when you're young, that's what you want to do, is be like cool and trendy. So it's like, how do we make being mentored cool and trendy? Like, how do we make being part of a team so appealing that you can't imagine doing it any other way? That becomes the game if you're going to be a salon owner.
Yeah, and we know a lot of people who left the salon suites because they missed 100%. Being around other people, being around other creatives, and you know what I mean? Otherwise, you're in a room by yourself.
But imagine being somebody who's never worked in a salon before, so you don't have the comparison. Like, if you went to beauty school and then went to a suite, you don't know what you don't know.
You're right.
And so you're like, maybe I just hate doing hair. And that's what scares me, is I think that we could lose a lot of good people who are just in the wrong environment but don't know better.
Right, but I'm going to hold you to that a little bit.
Just, come on.
Only because I'm not debating you, by the way. I'm just.
Oh, bring it on.
I almost left the industry because there was somebody that I was in a team based salon that I hated working with, but I didn't realize how much I hated working with that person until I left that salon. Like, I was like, you know what? I'm going to leave this salon because I'm unhappy anyway. So what's the point? You know, and then I left that salon and I go, oh, okay. So a lot of my unhappiness was working next to XYZ, not necessarily the industry, my clients, the yada, 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 yada.
Then why'd you come in and sweet with me then?
Woo!
No, that was when we left before. That was when we left our salon over there in Bethesda.
Okay, but no,
I was saying I was the reason why you left.
Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly.
Never. No. I think you brought up a good point, though, and that's like to any salon leader who's listening to this right now, like, you're going to lose the core.
I forgot there was other people listening.
I know, it's just us. Sorry, it's just us. but if you keep the bad apples around, you lose the good talent. And I think that's important to know too. Like, sometimes we keep the heavy hitters too long, or, you know, oh, she's my friend, she's going through a hard time, I couldn't let her go. It's like, all right, well, then you're going to lose four other really great people in the process of hanging on to somebody who doesn't belong anymore.
Hey, you have a unique perspective, I assume. Like, when there's a salon walkout, Well, what do you think drives that? Do you think it's like bad people, bad management, or you know, with your experience, what kind of, yeah, go there. I don't know. It wasn't a question, but I'll open it up to you.
No, that's so interesting. I actually have a podcast coming out about this because a salon owner messaged me and she was furious with her stylist because they walked out on her. And I was like, I mean, I get it. I'd be furious too, totally empathize, but like, tell me more because I wanted to know what happened. And then you hear the story of likely what prompted the stylist to leave. And I always like take a step back and pretend I'm like sitting above looking down and I'm being totally unbiased. And what was happening, flash forward, is the salon owner wasn't making enough profit, was very financially stretched thin, and was doing the thing that a lot of salon owners do where they kind of lean on their stylist as if they're friends. And it's like, they're sharing what's going on and they're talking about their fears. And what happened is their team panicked. Her team completely panicked and was like, if you are this like running on a fine line, we've got to get out of here. And so I think sometimes salon walkouts happen because of oversharing. I think on the flip side, micromanaging is another huge reason why people leave. Like, we're in the era of the entrepreneurship. Like, everybody wants to feel independent. I have 14 employees who work for me, but if you ask them, they feel extremely independent. And I think that's the formula that needs to happen today. Like, if you are micromanaging, I see a lot of like growth paths that salon owners create where it's like, okay, I'm going to make stuff up. Like, you're going to be an apprentice stylist for the first 18 months, and then you can graduate to Sapphire, and then you could be an Emerald once you've achieved blah, blah, blah things. That was so cute in 1993, and it's just not what works now. And there needs to be more autonomy. So I think it's like oversharing, friend zoning our stylists, and then also not giving the room for them to feel independent and a part of the team at the same time.
I think our industry is uniquely qualified for that too, because we are, totally. Whether, no matter how we slice it or dice it, it is your business behind the chair, you know, regardless. Okay. So you said that there, your 14 people that work for you feel as if they're independent. So what's your management style? So you give them that autonomy.
That's a really good question. I think like when I get down to the core of it, my expectations are extremely clear. Everybody has a job description, which I think is really missing in this industry. Like, if stylists work for you, I hope all of them has like a written down job description that you go over with them every 90 days. And then as they start to, if it's somebody who's an employee, so let's say you're paying them hourly or commission or whatever, every time they get a commission increase, they should get a new job description. Because we have all these like underlying expectations of like, well, Susie never cleans up after herself, and Jameson should really stock the order when it comes in. And there's all these expectations that are not detailed out. And so then you have nothing to hold anybody to when somebody is acting a fool. And so having clear expectations, having core values. So my team knows what's expected of them. So long as they do their jobs in full, I don't care if they work 3 hours today or 13. You need to do it until it gets done. I could have half my team could be out to a long lunch right now. I'd have no idea. It doesn't matter because they all meet their deadlines. They all hit their financial benchmarks. And so when salon owners message me and they're like, I have a booth renter and she only ever works 4 hours a day. Who cares? Why do you care what she's up to? She pays her booth rent on time. And we have these like over controlling ideas of what success looks like. So long as you are renting enough booths that you're making a profit, or your commission team is generating enough money, why do you care? I'd much rather have a stylist that produces $100,000 in 3 days than a stylist produces $120,000 in 5. Like, my chair is so much more profitable if you make more in a shorter amount of time. So I think we just have to kind of like unhook the wagon and realize like we're building modern business. And that's how I lead my team. And so long as you're doing what you're supposed to and meeting your job requirements, we're square. I don't really care about the rest.
It took forever at the old salon that we worked at forever. You know, I finally got them to talk them into letting us work 4 days a week.
Yes.
You know, but prior to that, it was, I don't think anybody did it until I did it. And yeah. Then once I did it, then a lot of the guys that was on our same level were able to do it.
And can I assume that when you went to 4 days a week, you still made great money? Like it doesn't affect
my income did not change at all.
Yeah. Exactly. So it's like we're holding on to these old school ideas that aren't even true. Like they're actually false statements.
Yeah.
And it's amazing too, because like since 2001, I've worked 4 days a week and like after the weekend, like, to be honest, I'm kind of ready to go back to work. Like I feel like, okay, it's time to go back to work and I'm ready to go there, as opposed to like, it seemed like, well, first off, never having 2 days off. There was a time where I didn't have 2 days off in a row and I never felt like I had a day off. Right. Cause you're exhausted from the day before, you couldn't stay up late or whatever, you know, that day, cause you had to work early and, you know, I'm an old man, but anyways, you know, that was, so are you training? Because what I'm hearing, and not to put words in your mouth, but what I'm hearing is that as an industry, let me think this through, as an industry, we're hairdressers, then we're salon owners, and then we're leaders, and we're leaders, but yet we haven't done anything to qualify us as the leader part. Mm. Right? Like we haven't gone to any like leadership, but as an industry as a whole, like that's kind of where we lack. We go from salons to owning a salon. I mean, from working in a salon to owning a salon. So are you, in your program, are you coaching how to be better leaders? And is that the basis of what Thrivers does?
I have a program that was a good question. That was very profound, actually. So I have a program called Thriving Leadership that specifically speaks to leaders. And so this is something I don't think that anybody talked about. So to any owners listening, like if you didn't know this, it's cool because no one was talking about it. So it's no fault of your own. I think most owners are actually operating as like managers, like middle managers, where it's like, yes, I'm the key holder. I open the door, I turn the lights on, I pay the bills. You know, I keep everything stocked. I cut the paychecks. That's essentially what a manager does. It's important. It has to get done. I still do a lot of those things for my business. So I'm not saying it's not important work. That's not leadership. So if no one's following, you're not leading. And a lot of people feel like they're at odds with their salon team, or I say something and nobody listens, or yeah, because you're not a leader, you're a manager. And a lot of people don't love working for managers. And you've got to be, like I call it the lighthouse or the North Star. Like you've got to be the person that they turn to when the S hits the fan, to be like, it's cool. You know, Corey can figure it out. He'll know the answer. He'll be able to save me. And a lot of us aren't leading in that way. And leading is hard because it forces you to fire the bad apples and make the hard choices and tell somebody they're getting a pay cut because unfortunately their productivity is down. But it's also what earns you the respect. And I think in our industry, we feel safer being the manager than actually stepping up and being the leader and making the hard choices. But it's also what I think gives you the most professional fulfillment, and B is what gives you the profit and the success that you were craving as a business owner.
That's profound.
Yeah, that is profound.
But it's hard.
Yeah, and you're right. I think the salon that we're constantly talking about, he did a great job at that. He would bring in managers in the salon, and he had leaders in every salon that led with education. You know what I mean? Mm. And try not to have the managers. So, you know, the managers would talk to you or whatever to make sure, you know, things ran smooth and it did everything. He made sure that his educators and his people were excited and learning and creating, and he was a really good leader in that way. And if you had an idea, he wouldn't discourage it. He would give you the power to make it happen, and if it was successful, and give you the opportunity to share it with everybody else.
Yeah. That's leadership, and that's exceptional. It's rare. Yeah.
And yeah. I mean, not only would he allow you, but he would finance it too. You know, if it wasn't a super expensive, you know, if you could come up with whatever budget, he would go, okay, yeah, let's do this here's $1,000. Let's see if we can get it off the ground, you know? And he also had 15 salons. So if you could get it to work in A, then you had A through X to kind of master it, you know? And he'd give that to you. I mean, he certainly gave us that opportunity a couple of times, you know.
Yeah,
which is pretty doggone cool.
And that's huge leadership. That builds that mutual trust, right? Which I think is a missing piece too. Of like, here's $1,000. I wish you all the best. Like, I hope that this works. But if it didn't, I imagine there wasn't like a punishment on the flip side. It's like, okay, cool. Okay, great. Okay, so that one didn't work. Let's keep digging in and working on it and come back to me if you think of something else. And that's effective leadership. It's innovative.
Yeah, yeah, it really is. It's sad. Like, as much as Tony and I always talk about on the podcast, man, we made a list of like 15 people or 20 people that when we started the podcast, that would be like our dream list. And he was on it. But for whatever reason, we can't nail that guy down. You know?
Interesting.
Hey, I hope this doesn't derail us too much, but I talked to Gerard Kierens, and he's just like so thankful for everything that you've been sharing with him. He's really, really impressed and likes the whole Thriver community. I think he joined actually right before Thrivers, because I think we chatted about it. But yeah, that's our man Gerard. We met in 1992 in London. It's a wild story. Like, we've been friends with Gerard for
we were in hair school.
Yeah, we were in
Harrisburg.
He was one of the instructors for Graham Webb.
In London.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Let me ask you this. Let me turn the tables. Yeah. Why do you think somebody like that would join Thriver Society?
I think that, I mean, I don't want to...
I don't want you to put words in his mouth either.
He's a salon owner.
After
COVID. Yeah.
To be honest, you want the truth, Britt?
Always.
He called me and he said, if you were to hire a coach in the country, who would it be?
That's the truth. Me cry. That's very kind of you. Thank you for that.
Well, that's the 100% truth. Yeah. He actually, you know what? That's a half of a lie. Hold on.
I knew it. I knew it was too good to be true.
No.
See, now you know how I feel.
I get it now. Now I get it.
Hold on, heartbreakers. He gave me a list of five, and he said, out of these five, and they were all, which is actually a bigger compliment, because none of them were bums, right? You know, but out of the five, he said, okay, out of these guys, who would you go with? And I didn't even blink. I said, there's only one on that list, and that's Britt Seva. So that's the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth. So help me God. I better look that up before I so help me God.
Hold on, we're going to call Gerard right now.
Well, I appreciate you very much, but the reason I ask is, like, that impresses the hell out of me, because for somebody to be so accomplished but still be like, but I know there's more. I know that I can refine this. I know that I can be better. I firmly agree in all of that. Like, being a lifetime student is the key to professional success big time. Like, we never know everything. And to be humble enough to say, like, okay, great. What's my next opportunity? Where else am I going to dig in? I mean, that's the most impressive thing to me. I'm wired the same. I love that.
Platform artist with Surface. I mean, he's traveled. Yeah, he's done everything.
Yeah. I think that was part of it too. I think part of it was that he spent, you know, 20, 25 years on the road as a platform artist.
Yep.
That then when he went to open up his salon, he was like, okay, like, maybe there's a disconnection here. So, like, I need a little bit of guidance on how to connect a little bit with growing his salon and what that looks like. Cause I don't think he's worked as a manager in a salon probably in those 20, 25 years, you know?
Yeah. And it changes fast.
Yeah.
Boy, does it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, certainly over the last 3 years, we've seen, you know, a mass amount of change. And on that thought, Britt, so we just had Randy Cotton on the podcast. If you're not, are you familiar with Randy?
A little bit.
Okay, so Randy, so for those of you that are listening in, so Randy is the CEO and the president, I think is his official title, of Salon Interactive. And what Salon Interactive is doing is that they're working with, including Salon Centric, they're working with distributors around the country to allow you to sell products directly to the consumer, directly to your clients, and they'll cut you off a commission. But to me, it's such a huge win as a suite owner, and I'm curious in your opinion if it actually makes it back to the salon. But as a suite owner, like, I don't have to carry inventory. Inventory takes up so much money to do as an independent, and as an independent, I'm just not selling enough products to do a big buy-in. Go ahead, Tony.
No, I was going to jump in. I was going to play devil's advocate a little bit in the sense of, I'm with you. I mean, they're paying out 25% commission. You know what I mean? And I don't have to carry any inventory. As a salon owner, usually you pay your stylist 10% commission, and they have it set up so where you can set up your stylist where they can still receive the 25%, right? So does the salon owner try to collect it all and then pay out the 10% later, or do they allow their stylist to collect the 25%?
I mean, listen, I think if I was a salon owner, and I'm just going off of like instinct here, I don't have any numbers behind me because it all comes down to numbers, but maybe you take the 10% and you give them the 15% because it's not costing you anything to be in the store. You know, it's not costing you anything. So let them benefit for that. We talked
about creativity.
Yeah, I do too. I like this brainstorm.
And the other thing too, though, and like when we talked to Rochelle Golden a couple months ago, is what she's done is she's removed her retail, and now she has stations there. She has, you know, she has mirrors that she can work on, and she feels, according to her numbers, that's a better profit center than products.
I think you hit the nail on the head when you said profit center. So I'm a huge believer in like, there's no one size fits all. And so even when I coach somebody, I'm always saying like, here's half a dozen ways you could get to where you want to go. Cause I think everybody's built different. I love Salon Interactive. I think the concept is innovative, fresh. I think it's in alignment with where just consumer behavior is headed, which is always where we should be looking forward. The thing that concerns me is I hope that those stylists who choose to go that direction or salons who choose to go that direction don't feel like it's a shortcut. What makes me nervous, what's always made me nervous about retail sales is I think that people get complacent with it and don't learn good retail sales strategy. And so it scares me when it almost becomes easier that people will become lazier. I hope that's not true. Like, hopefully I'm making that up and that's just garbage talk that I'm saying. But I think when it's out of sight, it's out of mind. So if you were going to go that direction, I would still have at least one piece from the entire line you're selling available in the salon, and you do the full pitch of the item. And I think that so many stylists are afraid to go full pitch because they feel like it's a heavy sales pitch. It should not feel salesy at all. It should feel like you are trying to tell your best friend about the thing that you are so obsessed with that you can't imagine them not having it in their own home. And then it ships directly to them. And then I'm here for that. But I think that it becomes this like, and you can order anything you want online. So just go for it. That's you're not going to get anywhere with that. So it could be 50% commission and it hardly matters if you're selling nothing. So what I would hope is that stylists and salon owners see that gigantic split, which it is, it's so generous, as an incentive to figure out great retail sales strategy. Because if you can, it's a landslide victory. But making sure that it doesn't become this out of sight, out of mind passive thing. I loved what you said when you said the stylist should get the lion's share of that commission, because I'm a fully believer in that. I think the stylist should always get the lion's share of anything. As you were saying, like how when we were asking, like, should the owner take a retail profit at all? I actually got a little on the fence about it. I think that salon owners should be profitable. And so you should either take retail profit if you think that there's going to be enough coming in. If you're going to take retail profit, then you should be taking less service profit. So I think that there has to be like a little breathing room on one end, or you take more service profit and none of the retail, which incentivizes your team to sell more. And I could make an argument for either way, but I think you have to watch the double dip on that and just make sure that like it's set up so that the stylist always gets the lion's share.
I love that. You know, as we're talking about this, is where my brain goes as well, is that, and I'm going to be harsh about this, and I don't mean this harshly at all, but just to make the point, is that you're not allowed to complain about Amazon, Sephora, Ulta taking your sales if it's just as easy for your client to go on the internet and buy it from you and buy it from Amazon. Because I don't think, knowing our clients or my clients, I'll be that hairdresser that goes only my clients, but I don't think my clients buy off of Amazon because it's disrespect to me or disrespect to my business. I think it comes down to convenience. And I think at 7 a.m. when they run out of product, they go, oh crap, I need to buy that product.
Because they do want to support you.
They do want to support you.
If they had an opportunity to go somewhere else and support you, they would.
Yeah, there's no doubt. You know?
I agree. And I think that like, when you look at like brick and mortar stores are still doing well, like the idea that like, well, on, you know, Sephora, Amazon, whatever has stolen all of our business. I just can't get on board with it. Like for as much as I buy stuff online, like I'm a human like everybody else, but it doesn't mean I don't go to the mall or I don't go to my favorite, you know, local spots. I buy all my skincare from my esthetician. But part of it is because I want to support her, but it's mostly because of the way she sells it to me. Like I wouldn't think about going online and buying it because She does such a great job of convincing me in the moment that I need it right the second. And when I'm running low, she'll DM me and be like, do you want me to auto ship this to you? Yep, I do. And so she's so on top of it that it's like, I don't even have a chance. And right. I think that's where we're falling short. So instead of like keeping up with our customer service, we're like, I hate Sephora. And it's like, no, you should hate the fact that you don't know how to sell in a modern way. That's what you should be frustrated with. But it's so easy to overcome. Like, I talked to some salons who were doing 30 grand a month in retail. So it's like, well, what's your disconnect? Like, it's still happening. You just have to learn how to facilitate it.
Yeah, that's it. Daniel Mason Jones says that. He goes, you can be mad at Amazon all you want.
Yes. We've
failed as an industry has failed to sell product.
Thank you. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
People are still buying it. It's just that we're not selling it properly.
Right.
Absolutely. But I'm really excited about, I'm trying to get out of saying super excited because I think we as an industry, we always do that. Super excited to be here, but I'm excited about that. I'm excited about having the opportunity to compete because again, I think it comes down to convenience, you know, and Salon Interactive also, it allows you to set up, frequencies. Right. So you can go, they send me one every 6 weeks and then bada bing, bada boom, we're all done.
This is part of what we talked about where we start the conversation off in the beginning is how the industry is evolving.
Heck yeah.
This is a huge part of the evolution.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
Agreed too. And I know the evolution is scary because it feels like super vulnerable and like we're losing everything we've ever known. But I think the more that we stay educated and eyes wide open and not afraid to just try new stuff, like if you bring a tool like that in and it appears to not be working for you, you first have to ask yourself, A, have I gone all in? And do I know what I'm doing? And have I really giving it, you know, a shot? And if not, okay, then you could go back to doing what you were doing before. But I think that fear of just like giving something a shot, we got to get over that and just and try and move forward. I have I was talking about Web 3.0, like NFTs and cryptocurrency and all that kind of stuff and how it's going to affect our industry. Cause it is like ultimately color formulas are going to live on the blockchain. Like we just kind of had to get down with it. But as I say that, it makes people upset because they're like, well, I don't want my color formula.
What is that? What is that? I'm a little upset, Britt. So like back up, like walk me through this.
Yeah. I mean, that's the future. Like ultimately the way things are looking now, most everything will ultimately live on the blockchain. Like you get an airline ticket, it's going to live on the blockchain. Your medical record's going to live on the blockchain. Your color formula going to live on the blockchain. And it can make a stylist mad. It doesn't matter. It's the reality of what's going to happen. And I think that we fight the reality of where consumer behavior and trends are going rather than accepting it, embracing it, and owning it. Like it could be a really cool thing. Imagine if you ever been in the position where a client is leaving and they're like, so I'm moving to Fort Lauderdale. If I could just have my color formula, that would be great. And then you feel like in this awkward spot of like, I've been working with you for 7 years. Like, yeah, just give it to your new stylist. I guess they don't even have to try. And so we get all our feelings about it. And it's this whole thing. Well, what the blockchain does is instead you say, absolutely. The value of your formula today is $1,000. You can just take it yourself. It's available on the blockchain. You can go ahead and unlock that. It's yours to take with you. Your stylist in Fort Lauderdale can have it or not. And that's your choice too. But it really changes the conversation. Blockchain can be used for stylists to have almost like a VIP clientele. Like maybe you only have 150 spots for your business. You're a stylist and you can handle 150 clients in your clientele. Well, those spots working with you now become assets on the blockchain that if this client does move to Fort Lauderdale, she can now sell that to the highest bidder on your wait list and make a profit when she bounces. There's just all these cool things that are evolving. And it sounds so obscure, right? It sounds like wacky and like, oh, I don't know about that. But you have to remember that like internet 1.0 sounded bonkers in 1993. And now we're here doing an interview like this and we live on the computers that we carry in our pocket, which is web 2.0. So I kind of don't even know how I got here. I just get on the soapbox. You know what?
I love it. I'm going to follow you up though. Yes, it sounds obscure, but we also,
I'm intrigued.
But hold on.
It's going to be amazing.
It's already here in a lesser manner because I have a couple clients who are doctors who are no longer part of the insurance anymore. What they're doing is they're doing concierge doctoring. Like they don't take insurance. It costs, get this. She has, I don't want to mess this up, but I think she has like she has like 200 patients and that's it.
I love it.
Okay. She has 200 patients, and it costs you like $3,000 a year to be a part of her program. Right now, granted, we live in an affluent area, but you know, now if you take like what number did I give, like 200, right? Now if you multiply that by 3,000, where are we at?
Yeah. You're at 600 grand.
Right, you're at 600 grand, but she's also charging for those appointments, right?
So that's like how the blockchain's going to work. That's like I'm sitting over here like drooling. That's brilliant. She's getting right? 600 grand flat just to play the game, like just to be just a part of the business. Mm-hmm. And then you're paying for everything that you get done there. I think it's so smart.
Exactly. So and I mean, now what does she do is as a club member, which is what we're talking about. As right. a club member, now you have access to her 24 hours a day. So that, you know, they all have her cell phone. It's not like you don't have to go through a reception. I mean, she has receptionists and stuff, but it's not that game. It's like, oh, let me text Ava like this. And whoops, I wasn't supposed to give out her name. But anyway, when she gets those, oh, I forgot, I lost my train of thought. But anyways, you just have full access to her, and you don't have to play the game. Oh, here's what I was going. And I was like, dude, don't you have that one person that drives you bonkers? And she was like, actually, I don't. She goes, everybody kind of respects my weekends, and everybody kind of, you know, respects my personal life. Now, if it's there, she's there for them, you know. And I will tell you that, you know, she's been in my chair and the phone rang, and I'm like, aren't you a doctor? Shouldn't you get that? And she's like, it'll be fine for a couple minutes. I go, it's your business. but
she has whatever. Healthy boundaries too. And if it's an emergency, they'll do what they have to do to get the help they need. But if she does get that annoying client who wants to call her every single day, she could just say, you're not a fit for my practice. I wish I could be there for you every single day. And it's not. And she's probably got 100 people who are on the
wait list. Oh, she's got a crazy wait list.
Yeah, yeah. No worries. Yeah. And it gives her true control of her business. Like that. Oh, I love that. That's 100% where we're headed. 100%.
I love it too. And like, I've been trying to think like, how can we like bring this over to our industry and what does that look
it's
like?
Coming. You know? It's coming. I think that clients aren't ready just yet, but I think it's important to have the conversation knowing that in the next few years, it's going to be a thing.
God, I kind of want to brainstorm about what that would look like. Like what would a club membership, a club hair appointment look like? You know, what could you, and where would the value be both for you and for the client? You know?
It's fun to think about that.
Yeah. I mean, so many possibilities. I mean, yeah, and somebody's going to do it, and then somebody else is going to do it and change it. It's going to that's going to evolve in itself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But would it work? Would it work in a team-based salon, or is it? Well, actually, you know what? Again, this morning when we were talking, Michael brought up a great point where he was like, you know, everything is being tried in the studios and then being backlogged back into the salons, right? So whether it's like online booking, whether like it's reception is free, or concierge thing, or whether it's, did I say online booking, or whether it's like the salon interactive type stuff, like all that's being tried, all that's being canaried in the suites, and then making its way back into the team-based thing. So again, if we were to do like a concierge, meaning like a club, you know, a hairdresser club kind of thing, would it first work in, you think it'd be first canaried there?
I mean, you could do it in salons in the sense maybe pay salary to your employees.
Right. Because the money's guaranteed. You're getting those right. Membership, quote unquote, membership fees or whatever. Yeah. It gives you that financial predictability as an owner that they have never had before. Like right, it is a true game changer. Go ahead.
No, no, you're up.
You think about the salons, like I won't drop names, but there's some salons that almost have like a cult-like following, and you get hired there feeling like it's almost like getting the golden ticket. Like you've got some built-in credibility and some built-in clientele. Imagine if they also had 2,000 people on the blockchain in their book of business. And it's like, well, now you get access to that. It's just another, going back to what we were talking about before, in a studio suite, you're building from nothing. Or I could go into this team-based salon that's got 2,000 people on their roster ready to rumble. It changes everything. It really levels the playing field in a lot of ways.
Yeah, there's actually a chain salon that's new to our area, but they have like a hair color club. I don't know how it works or how it's broken down, but you know, it's like you pay like, you know, X amount per month and you can get your hair color. I mean, I was trying not to say that, but you know, forget you now. This is why Britt's doing my next podcast with me.
Yeah, see? You're getting replaced real quick. See what you're doing here? Yeah.
He earned it.
Okay, but can we talk about that for a second so nobody gets any wacky ideas? So the thing with membership you have to be careful of. So I'm like, the name that you just mentioned can pull something like that off, because I'd imagine, I've never been to a place like that, but it would be like going to a dry bar. If I go in a dry bar, I don't know if I'm going to get Mary or Michaela today. I have no idea, but someone's going to do my blowout, right? If you do like a color membership in a salon, if you go membership model, you have to guarantee people can get what they're paying for. So if everyone's like, oh, I'm going to sell, you get one root touch-up a month. Cool. So you might have to work 14 hours on a Saturday if you can't get everybody in by the end of the month because you've now promised it. And so it can work. It's just important to realize like there's some legalities to it. You can't just do whatever the heck you want. But in a corporation like that, they've got the flexibility. I don't know what their terms are, but I imagine it's kind of like, yeah, you can get your color done. Don't know who's going to do it, but somebody will be available. It's right. Just a really different model.
But your color's in the blockchain of their.
That's right.
Exactly right. That is interesting to think about, like what the blockchain and all that and how it's going to affect.
But all of it seem impossible, and then all these things are popping up everywhere, and they're being successful.
Right. Yeah. Right. I mean, I remember when I was trying to convince my stylist back in like, gosh, it was probably like 2012, like, we got to get on Facebook. We got to get on Instagram. And they were like, okay, lady, like as if it mattered. And now it's like, you can't run business without it. Right. Flash forward 10 years. And it's like step one, start your Instagram. It's just, it seems impossible until it's the reality and it's coming.
Boy, is it. You know, it's going to come quick too, because we've already kind of dealt in like this technology world. Like there's no longer that, like you said, like in 2012, there was the hesitation. Well, the hesitation can no longer be the excuse, nope. Right? Like you have to like, all right, well, let's ramp it up and go. Yeah. That'll be really, really interesting, you know?
And
follow Britt Siva because, you know, she's actually following the trends and, you know, the trends that she's setting is what the other coaches are picking up. So, you know, you might as well go to the head.
I love you guys. Thank you for saying that.
Dude, you know, it's true. I mean, we haven't had blockchain conversation with anyone.
I'm also a tech geek, so I love like playing in this arena. It's fun.
Well, I mean,
we've had crypto. Conversation.
Well, we had a crypto conversation. Cool too. Yeah, but I mean that's a different conversation because once again, through you know, you keep hearing Web3 and NFT and all that, but you're like, well, how's it going to affect our salon, our industry? Because I couldn't figure it out at all. But
right.
Now, you just kind of said, okay, here's how it could, and you're like, oh, and I'm sure you're short selling it a lot. I'm sure it's going to affect the industry way more than just. I mean. How would appointments work, you know, on the
board? That wasn't even on my radar. And when you said it, I'm like, ding, ding. Exactly. You know, it's like, right. It can easily go that way.
Y'all, this is how I spend my weekends. I'm like, how is the blockchain going to affect us? But that's how my brain works. I'm like trying to put the dots together 5-10 years ahead, because if we can get out ahead of it, that's how we stay cutting edges in industry. That is what has kept us slow and small for so long, is we wait and we wait for something to prove itself. Like people are just now getting to online books. Come on. Like it we're just so slow on the uptake. And if we can just close that gap even a little bit, we'll be unstoppable.
I mean, think about like the conversation we had today with like Salon Interactive and all this. I mean, like this should have happened 15 years ago.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. We should have been launching when Amazon launched, like if we really wanted to be cutting edge, right?
Yeah.
But the best time to start is now, and it's happening. And the shorter we can make those gaps of like us jumping into what consumers want today, the faster we'll explode. And we're getting close. It's exciting.
We're getting close. Well, yeah. It just it took us a long, long time. Probably. You know what? I'll say it. I mean, it probably took like Instagram or Facebook, kind of just being in that world to even go to online booking. Like, okay, now we're comfortable enough. Now we're comfortable enough to, because I don't even know if in 2005 if everybody had a computer.
It's in there.
No, they didn't. No way. No
it's
way.
It's an exciting time to be a young hairdresser now.
It is.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. To be a young hairdresser starting off, the possibilities are endless.
I know. Yeah. There's so many doors that open now. And that's why our industry is growing so fast. There's more people enrolled in cosmetology school all at one time right now than ever in the history of the industry. And that's amazing to see like young people straight out of high school who are like, I know where I'm going, like in a really deep, powerful way. It's exciting. Good stuff.
That's awesome. We need you to chat to our friends over at Paul Mitchell, the Temple School, but that's a whole nother story.
I would love that. If y'all will meet me there, we can do an in-person. That would be the best.
Yes, right down the street from my house. We'd definitely do it there.
We're in. Awesome. We'll make it happen.
Great. We'll make that happen. Britt Siva, we love you so much, and like, yeah. and like it's so cool for this. This conversation today is so cool because it feels like a couple friends just chatting it up over a coffee, you know, where even the podcast, even the conversation that we've had in the past felt a little bit more like a podcast.
Yeah.
But Tony will tell you, like, the podcast that I love the most is just when we chop it up. And just when our famous quote is like, let the conversation dictate the conversation.
I love that. I love that.
When we actually get to do that, I love that. And you know, you're so brilliant that, you know, whatever we threw your way, you had like such great insight on. So we love you. We love everything about you and totally appreciate that you took the time out today to chat with us.
I love y'all too. And everybody misses the good stuff in the pre-show, but before we hopped on, they both said like, we don't really know what we're going to talk about today. We'll just see where it goes. And it made me so excited because it's so fun to do exactly what you just said, like just have a real conversation and let everybody kind of like listen as on a fly on the wall as to kind of some of the cool things to come. So thank you for keeping it informal like this and just letting us vibe. This was awesome. Thank you guys.
Letting us vibe. That's
the name of the podcast.
That's the name of the podcast. Letting us vibe. I love it. Yeah. I'm going to write that down. Letting us vibe. Awesome. Letting us vibe. Miss Britt Seva, thank you very much for hanging out with us. And thank you very, very much for joining us on your day off.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, share it with friends, give us a rating, and drop a review. To listen to all the latest podcasts, please subscribe from your favorite podcast outlet. And to stay connected on and off the show, you can follow us at Hairdistry on Instagram and all other social media platforms. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time. Peace and love.